Unwirer with Cory Doctorow. The cops caught Roscoe as he was tightening the butterfly bolts on the dish antenna he'd pitoned into the rock face opposite the Canadian side of Niagara Falls. They were state troopers, not Fed radio cops, and they pulled their cruiser onto the soft shoulder of the freeway, breaking a few feet short of the soles of his boots. It took Roscoe a moment to tighten the bolts down properly before he could let go of the dish and roll over to face the cops, but he knew from the crunch of their boots on the road salt and the creak of their cold holsters that they were the law.
"Be right with you, officers,"
he hollered into the gale-force winds that whipped along the rock face. The antenna was made from a surplus pizza dish satellite rig, a polished tomato soup can, and a length of coax that descended to a pigtail with the right fitting for a wireless card. All perfectly legal, mostly. He tightened the last of the bolts, squirted them with Loctite, and slid back on his belly, off the insulated thermarest he'd laid between his chest and the frozen ground. The cops' heads were wreathed in the steam of their exhalations, and one of them was nervously flicking his, no, her, handcuffs around on her belt.
"Everything all right, sir?"
the other one said, in a flat upstate New York accent. A townie. He stretched his gloved hand out and pulled Roscoe to his feet.
"Yeah, just fine," he said. "I like to watch winter birds on the river. Forgot my binocs today, but I still got some good sightings." "Winter birds, huh?"
The cop was giving him a bemused look.
"Winter birds."
The cop leaned over the railing and took a long look down.
"Huh. Better you shouldn't do it by the roadside, sir," he said. "Never know when someone's going to skid out and drive off onto the shoulder. You could be crushed."
He waved at his partner, who gave them a hard look, and retreated into the steamy warmth of the cruiser.
"All right, then," he said. "When does your node go up?"
Roscoe smiled and dared a wink.
"I'll be finished aligning the dish in about an hour. I've got line of sight from here to a repeater on the support on the Rainbow Bridge, and from there down the Rainbow Street corridor. Some good tall buildings there. Line of sight to most of downtown, at least when the trees are bare. Leaves and wireless don't mix. My place is 4th and Walnut. Think you'll get there?"
Roscoe relaxed imperceptibly, certain now that this wasn't a bust.
"Hope so. Sooner rather than later." "That'd be great. My kids are emailing me out of house and home."
The cop looked uncomfortable and cleared his throat.
"Still, you might want to finish this one, then go home and stay there for a while. DA's office, they've got some kind of hotshot from the FCC in town preaching the gospel, and, getting heavy on bird watchers. That sort of thing."
Roscoe sucked in his lower lip.
"I may just do that," he conceded. "And thank you for the warning."
The cop waved as he turned away.
"My pleasure, sir."
Roscoe drove home slowly, and not just because of the snow and compacted slush on the roads. A hot shot from the FCC sounded like the Inquisition come to town. Roscoe's lifelong mistrust of radio cops had metastasized into surging hatred 3 years ago, when they busted him behind a federal telecoms rap. He'd lost his job and spent the best part of 6 months inside, though he'd originally been looking at a 5-year contributory infringement stretch, compounded to 20 by the crypto running on the access point under the Use a Cipher, Go to Jail statute, to second-degree tariff evasion. His public defender had been worse than useless, but the ACLU had filled an amicus on his behalf, which led the judge to knock the beef down to criminal trespass and unlawful omission, 6 months and 2 years probation, 2 years in which he wasn't allowed to program a goddamn microwave oven, let alone admin the networks that had been his trade. Prison hadn't been as bad for him as it could have been. Unwirers got respect. But while he was inside, Janice filed for divorce, and by the time he got out, he'd lost everything he'd spent the last decade building. His marriage, his house, his savings, his career. Everything except for the unwiring. It was this experience that had turned him from a freewheeling geek into what FCC Chairman Valenti called one of the copyright crooks whose illegal pirate networks provide safe havens to terrorists within the homeland and abroad. And so it was with a shudder and a glance over his shoulder that he climbed the front steps and put his key in the lock of the house he and Marcel rented. Marcel looked up from his laptop as Roscoe stamped through the living room.
"Slushy boots! For Christ's sakes, Roscoe, I just cleaned!"
Roscoe turned to look at the salty brown slush he'd tracked over the painted floor and shook his head.
"Sorry,"
he said, lamely, and sat down on the floor to shuck his heavy steel-shank Kodiaks. He carried them back to the doormat, then grabbed a roll of paper towels from the kitchen and started wiping up the mess. The landlord used cheap enamel paint on the floor, and the road salt could eat through to the scuffed wood in half an hour.
"And paper towels! God, it's like you've got a personal vendetta against the forests! There's a rag bag under the sink, as you'd know if you ever did any cleaning around this place." "Ease the fuck off, kid. You sound like my goddamned ex-wife," Roscoe said, giving the floor a vicious swipe. "Just ease back and let me do my thing, all right? It didn't look so good."
Marcel set his machine down reverently on the small hearthrug beside his Goodwill recliner.
"What happened?"
Roscoe quickly related his run-in with the law. Marcel shook his head slowly.
"I bet it's bullshit. Ever since Tijuana, everyone's seeing spooks. The ISPs on the Tijuana side of the San Ysidro border crossing had been making good coin off of Unwirer sympathizers who'd pointed their antennae across the chain-link fence. La Migra tried tightening the fence gauge up to act as a Faraday cage, but they just went over it with point-to-point links that were also resistant to the noise from the 2.4 gigahertz light standards that the INS erected at its toll booths. Finally, the radio cops got tired of ferreting out the high-gain antennae on the San Diego side, and they'd ruby-ridged the whole operation, killing 10 terrorists in a simultaneous strike with Mexican narcs who'd raided the ISPs under the rubric of shutting down narco-trafficante activity. Telmex had screamed blue murder when their fiber had been cut by the simple expedient of driving a backhoe through the main conduit, and had pulled lineage all along the Rio Grande."
Roscoe shook his head.
"Bullshit or not, you going to take any chances?"
He straightened up slowly.
"Believe me, there's one place you don't want to go."
"Okay, okay, I hear what you're saying."
"I hope you do."
Roscoe dumped the wad of towels in the kitchen trash and stomped back into the living room, then dropped himself on the sofa.
"Listen, when I was your age, I thought it couldn't happen to me either. Now look at me."
He started thumbing his way through the stack of old magazines on the coffee table.
"I'm looking at you."
Marcel grinned.
"Listen, there was a call while you were out."
"A call?" Roscoe paused with his hand on a collector's copy of 2600, the Hacker Quarterly.
"Some woman said she wanted to talk to you. I took her number."
"Uh-huh." Roscoe put the magazine back down. Heads, it's Janice. Tails, it's her lawyer, he thought. It was shaping up to be that kind of day. A tire slashing and an hour of alimonial recriminations would complete it neatly. Marcel pointed at the yellow pad next to the elderly dial phone.
"Ah, shit. I suppose I should find out what it's about."
The number, when he looked at it, wasn't familiar. That didn't mean much. Janice was capable of moving, and her frothingly aggro lawyer seemed to carry a new cellular every time he saw her. But it was hopeful. Roscoe dialed.
"Hello? Roscoe, who am I talking to?"
A stranger's voice.
"Hi there. I was talking to your roommate about an hour ago. I'm Sylvie Smith. I was given your name by a guy called Buzz, who told me you put him on the backbone."
Roscoe tensed. Odds were that this Sylvie Smith was just another innocent kitty looking to leech a first-mile feed, but after this morning's run-in with the law, he was taking nothing for granted.
"Are you a law enforcement officer, federal employee, police officer, lawyer, FCC, or FBI agent?"
he asked, running the words together, knowing that if she was any of the above, she'd probably lie, but it might help sway a jury toward letting him off if he was targeted by a sting.
"No."
She sounded almost amused.
"I'm a journalist."
"Then you should be familiar with Callia,"
he said, bridling at the condescension in her voice. Callia was the wiretap law. It required switch vendors to put snoopware into every hop in the phone network. It was bad enough in and of itself, but it made the non-compliant routing code that was built into the BIOS access points he had hidden in a bus locker doubly illegal, and hence even harder to lay hands on.
"Paranoid much?" she said.
"I have nothing to be paranoid about,"
he said, spelling it out like he was talking to a child.
"I am a law-abiding citizen, complying with the terms of my parole. If you are a journalist, I'd be happy to chat. In person."
"I'm staying at the Days Inn on Main Street," she said. "It's a dump, but it's got a view of the falls,"
she said in a hokey secret agent voice, making it plain that she meant its line of sight to a repeater for a Canadian wireless router. I can be there in 20, he said.
Room 208, she said. Knock twice, then once, then three times.
Then she giggled.
Or just send me an SMS.
See you then, he said. Marcel looked up from his machine, an IBM box manufactured for the U.S. market. It was the size of a family Bible and styled for the corporate market. They both lusted furiously after the brushed aluminum slivers that B was cranking out in France, but those laptops were way too conspicuous here. Roscoe pointed at the wireless card protruding from the slot on the side nearest him.
You're violating security, he said. I could get sent up again just for being in the same room as that.
He was past being angry, though. In the joint, he'd met real crooks who could maintain real project secrecy. The cowboy kids he worked with on the outside thought that secrecy meant talking out of the side of your mouth in conspiratorial whispers while winking toretically. Marcel blushed.
It was a mistake, okay?
He popped the card.
I'll stash it.
The Days Inn was indeed a dump, and doubt nagged at Roscoe as he reached for the front door. If she was a Fed, there might be more ways she could nail him than just by arresting him in the same room as an illegal wireless card. So Roscoe turned around and drove to a diner along the block from the motel, then went inside to look for a wired phone.
Room 208, please.
Hi there. If you'd care to come outside, there's a diner about 50 yards down the road. Just turn left out of the lobby. I'm already there. He hung up before she could ask any awkward questions, then headed for a booth by the window. Almost as an afterthought, he pulled a copy of 2600 out of his pocket. The hacker magazine, shut down by a court injunction last year, was a good recognition signal. Plus, having it didn't violate the letter of his parole. Roscoe was halfway down his first mug of coffee when someone leaned over him.
Hi, she said.
You must be Sylvie.
He registered a confused impression of bleached blonde hair, brown eyes, freckles. Must be straight out of J school.
Have a seat. Coffee?
Yes, please.
She put something like a key ring down, then waved a hand, trying to catch the waitress's eye. Roscoe looked at the key ring. Very black, very small, very Nokia. Rumor said they were giving them away in cereal boxes in France.
Suppose you tell me why you wanted to meet up, Roscoe said quietly. Up front. I can tell you right now that I'm out on parole, and I've got no intention of doing anything that puts me back inside.
The waitress ambled over, pad in hand. Sylvie ordered a coffee.
What were you charged with? She said. If you don't mind my asking.
Roscoe snorted. Score one for the cool lady. Some folks he'd met ran a mile the instant he mentioned being a con. I was accused of infringement with a side order of black crypto, but plea bargained it down to unlawful emissions. Score two. She smiled. It was a weak joke, but it took some of the sting out of it. Strictly no-collar crime. He took another mouthful of coffee. So what is it you're doing up here?
I'm working on a story about some aspects of unwiring that don't usually make the national press, she said as the waitress came over, empty mug in one hand and jug in the other.
Roscoe held his up for a refill.
Credentials?
I could give you a phone number, but would you trust it?
Point.
Roscoe leaned back against the elderly vinyl seat, young but cynical.
Well, she added, I can do better.
She pulled out a notepad and began scribbling.
This is my editor's name and address. You can look up his number. If you place a call and ask for him, you'll get put through. You're on the list of interview subjects I left him. Next, here's my... no, an... email address.
Roscoe blinked. It was a handle on a famous Finnish anonymous remixer.
Get a friend to ping it and ask me something.
It was worth 5 to 20 for black crypto. Anonymity was the FCC's worst nightmare about the uncontrolled net.
Finally, here's my press pass.
Okay, I'll check these out.
He met her eyes.
Now why don't you tell me why the Wall Street Journal is interested in a burned-out ex-con and ex-unwirer, and we can take it from there.
She closed her eyes for a moment. Then she dangled her keyring again, just a flash of matte black plastic.
These are everywhere in Europe these days, along with these.
She opened her purse, and he caught a glimpse of a sliver of curved metal, like a boomerang, in the shape of the Motorola Batwing logo mark.
They're meshing wireless repeaters. Once you've got a critical mass, you can relay data from anywhere to anywhere. Teenagers are whacking them up on the sides of buildings, tangling them in tree branches, sticking them to their windows. The telcos there are screaming blue murder, of course. Business is down 40% in Finland, 60% in France. Euros are using the net for telephone calls, instant messaging, file sharing. The wireline infrastructure is looking more and more obsolete every day. Even the ISPs are getting nervous.
Roscoe tried to hide his grin. To be an unwirer in the streets of Paris, operating with impunity, putting the telcos, the Hollywood studios, and the ISPs on notice that there was no longer any such thing as a consumer. That yesterday's couch potatoes are today's participants.
We've got 10 years' worth of editorials in our morgue about the destruction of the European entertainment and telco market, and the wisdom of our national information infrastructure here in the U.S. But it's starting to ring hollow. The European governments are ignoring the telcos. The device and services market being built on top of the freenets is accounting for nearly half the GDP in France. To hear my paper describe it, though, you'd think they were starving in the streets. It's like the received wisdom about Canadian socialized healthcare. Everyone knows it doesn't work, except for the Canadians, who think we're goddamned barbarians for not adopting it. I just got back from a month in the field in the EU. I've got interviews in the can with CEOs, with street thugs, with grandmothers, and with regulators, all saying the same thing. Unmetered communications are the secret engine of the economy, of liberty. The highest quality content isn't $100 million movies, it's conversations with other people. Crypto is a tool of privacy.
She pronounced it in the British way, privacy, making the word seem even more alien to his ears.
Not piracy. The unwirers are heroes in Europe. You hear them talk, it's like listening to a course in U.S. constitutional freedoms. But here, you people are crooks, cable thieves, pirates, abettors of terrorists. I want to change that.